Hi, my name is John, and I'm from the Clean Insights team. Today, I want to talk to you about privacy-preserving measurement and how Clean Insights fits into that landscape. So today, we'll take a survey of all the privacy-preserving techniques that are out there. Actually, not all of them, but a small but useful subset of them, and how Clean Insights fits in there, right? And then by the end of this talk, hopefully, you'll have a sense of whether or not Clean Insights or other technologies are right for your organization. Right? What's the right way for you to handle privacy? As scope, there's available packages, and then there are techniques in the world, right? And the available packages are things like Clean Insights, right? Near and dear to my heart, Matomo, Plausible, or Google Analytics, which is more of the business as usual approach, right? There are also techniques that are out there, and here I've got kind of the technical names. You may be familiar with them, you may not. The good news is you don't need to know their technical names. We're going to talk about them in plain English, and then you can kind of dig in and go down that rabbit hole if you find a particular area that's most important or most relevant to what you're trying to accomplish. If you've got any questions about this, you can always reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you and figure out which of these techniques are right for you and how to apply them. So let's start here. Why would we want to do private analytics in the first place? And you know, my favorite answer to that is it's not nice to spy on people. You can learn what you want to learn without keeping elaborate dossiers on every single user. So think about the difference between users spend 20% longer on the redesigned site. Maybe that's what you're going for, right? That may be all you're looking to find out is, are they spending more or less time? Was this a good redesign, right? Contrast that with the way that data is usually gathered, which is I know exactly how long each user, including you, spent on my site, right? You don't have to spy on people. You don't have to get that kind of granular, personalized data to answer the question you've really got, because none of us are actually sitting here looking at every click of every single user all the time. That's not even what we're up to. So why bother collecting in the first place? It's not nice. Also, leaks happen. On the right, this is a list from Wikipedia of all of the leaks that they've recorded. You'll notice this gets partway through the A's, right? And the number of records is just unconscionably large, right? Just like you don't keep toxic chemicals in your home, you don't want to keep toxic data in your database. If it gets hacked, if it gets leaked, it shouldn't hurt if it doesn't have to. So don't keep toxic things around. Repurposing also happens. Sometimes you build something thinking it's only going to be used for good. Then different things happen. On the right, you can see there's a news story about a suicide hotline that began selling data with a for-profit spinoff, right? And I would imagine that the engineers and the designers who built that product in the first place certainly did not have that use in mind when they built it. And yet that data was able to be repurposed for what feels to me like nefarious ends, right? Subpoenas also happen. So in your country, in your, say, cloud provider's country or anywhere that your business might operate, you might be subject to legal pressure to reveal information about your users. So you might ask yourself, who are my users and who wants to know what about them, right? And it might turn out that even if you're not in the space of something sensitive, you might be, say, mapping software. Turns out that the government might have a strong interest in the behavior of your users and later on subpoena you for that. Right on the right, we see that the government sought a list of all people who were within a certain geographic area, knowing full well that Google had that information. And last, this is counterintuitive, but you get better data through private analytics for two reasons. Number one, when you're doing things that are very invasive, users are finely tuned to it. They want to turn it off. They want to hit no. And if you actually do the best practices of asking for that consent, the UK's own office that promulgates such best practices found that 90% of users did not consent. So first of all, you're getting just that 10%. I will be willing to wager that those are not a representative 10%. And so your data is already a little bit mucked with at that point. The other reason you get better data is that when you do privacy preserving analytics, you're asking up front what it is you want to know, and you're being really deliberate about it. And that kind of mindfulness pays a lot of dividends over time, because the data you end up with is data that is relevant to you, that is going to help you make better decisions, not just a pile of stuff that A, you got to spend a lot of time to sift through anyways, and B, may not be relevant to the problems you're actually trying to solve as an organization, right? So you do have opportunities to get better data even though you're doing what seems like a more sparing approach. I'll also say you probably know more about privacy-preserving measurement than you might think. And that's because we do deal with these techniques, but we see them through a different lens. You know, we might think of web analytics as fundamentally different than when we go to the polls to vote. But in both cases, what you're trying to do is produce a trustworthy aggregate response. For example, what percent of people prefer candidate A, or what percent of people take action B in an application, right? Without revealing anything sensitive about each participant. So for example, in my hometown, they may know that I voted, right? Or that I am registered. They may know the total of votes for each candidate in a precinct, but they do not know who voted for who, right? And there's little technologies that they use for that. So you've got the glass globe or a bag kind of suspended in air, and that shows that no one's messing with the pile of votes. And so at the end of the day, as they're counted, you know that, yes, these, you know, N number of people walked by and put something in, and that's exactly what we're going to take out. And it encourages some trust in the system because we can all see how it's operating. The best way to figure out, you know, say you've decided you want to do analytics and you say, okay, I need to figure out what package I'm going to use. The best way to do that is to start by asking what kind of privacy you want, what techniques to use, and then use that to guide you to what analytics package is right. There are a lot of different types of privacy you might want. This is just kind of a sketch of it that we put together. It's not exhaustive, but it covers most of the common aspects. One is anonymity. You may say, I want this information, but I don't need to know who you are, right? I don't need to know who the user is. So I want to know which combination of WebMD pages each user looked at, right, would be an example. And I don't just want to know a count for each page. I need to know that if you looked at page A and page C, right, or page C and page Q, because I want to understand which conditions users experience together and research at the same time, right? But I don't want to know who each user is. I just want to know that, like, user A did this, that, and the other thing, and user B did, you know, these two other things. You might also want non-toxicity, right? And this is, we talked about those leaks. You say, listen, I just don't want the database to be a liability to me or to my users, right? One way to approach that is to take only what you need in the first place. And we'll talk about some other strategies. Confidentiality, right? You may say, I object to the idea of, just because I want analytics on my website, feeding that data to a company that uses it for surveillance capitalism, right? You may want to have sovereignty over the data you're collecting, right? You're already building your own application. You have some sovereignty over that. Have sovereignty over the analytics data you collect as well. And last is legality. This one is boring, but it is omnipresent, something we all deal with. You may want to give privacy guarantees that meet the legal requirements in jurisdictions that you are subject to. One really good way of doing that is doing things that are inherently private and keep you further from that line as that becomes a moving target, right? We see different rulings and different laws passed all the time. If you're doing something that's inherently private and not pushing the limits, it means you're less likely to constantly have to change in order to keep up with the changing regimes, and you'll still be able to run your business or your organization really effectively. You may have a different set of needs. You may be mixing and match these. If you don't know what they are yet, let's talk. We at Clean Insights love to help people figure out what's right for them in this space. If you do choose to come talk to us, visit cleaninsights.org/beans. We will mail you a bag of these real live coffee beans, our house label, and you can grind these up and brew them and enjoy them during our conversation. So we've asked what kinds of privacy we want. We now ask, what kind of techniques should I use to give me that kind of privacy? So this is a quick kind of tour of it, and we'll talk about it in plain English. There are a number of ways that you can establish anonymity that might be appropriate in different circumstances. One is to forward data through a trusted intermediary who's not going to tattle on you. This is the asking for a friend principle, right? You can say, I'm going to hand everything to a trustworthy anonymizer, and that will hand it on to the eventual source. And basically that means that the data collector only ever speaks to the anonymizer, and so doesn't know who any of the end users are. That has to be trusted. You can do that cryptographically, or you can do that through social trust mechanisms, an organization, for example, with a strong reputation for privacy. Another option is to say what happened and not who did it. We gave that example earlier about WebMD. Sometimes you can't get away from it, needing to know that the same user did action A and action B, but sometimes you can. So you just say page X was visited, not user A visited page X. The less you collect, the less likely it is to be able to be re-identified later on and used to harm users. You can also be forgetful, right? So I might remember today who you are from an hour ago, but I might delete that identifier frequently. So I might be able to see what a user did within the course of a day, but I'm not keeping a lifelong dossier on every site they've ever visited or every page they've ever visited on my site. You can also use a trusted broker, and this kind of addresses anonymous from whom, right? The census, for a number of reasons, collects detailed data in the United States about each household. But even researchers who use household data don't see the entirety of that data. They see an anonymized subset of it. So you're trusting that census data or census bureau to guarantee your anonymity by hiding parts of it. It's a weak guarantee, but if you have a trusted entity, it can be a powerful model depending on who you are, right? Server-side measurement is another option that's out there. If users are doing most of their interactions with your server anyway, you don't need to install additional software that's sending additional traffic over the wire just to enable analytics, right? A lot of folks think about it as, hey, I want to do analytics. I need an analytics product. A lot of analytics products are all built to work on the client anyway. Therefore, I add that. The answer might be that you have all the interesting information in hand already, and you don't need to instrument the user's device and start doing things and sending things over the wire that might be revealing. Last, you got a random identifier instead of an IP address or PII. This is a, you know, somewhat straightforward approach, but it's flimsy, right? If I give you a random identifier, but I know three IP addresses that you were at during the day, maybe it's your school, your home, and a restaurant near your home, I can pretty quickly identify who you are. So these may not be as strong a guarantee as you want, but it is better than saying, you know, let's keep the name John Smith of 123 Main Street in our database. When we look at non-toxicity, right, which is another aspect, that's the good, I've got this database, maybe it's anonymous, maybe it's not, but I want it to be relatively harmless if it is revealed or cracked open. There's a couple techniques that are out there. You can collect only what you need. Very straightforward. Collect only what you need, right? Why bother having anything else? That's just a liability in the context of toxicity. You can be vague. So you could record what latitude and longitude somebody's at. You could record their IP address. You could fingerprint their browser. You could do any number of things. But if what you really want to know is how many users are coming from each country, you could just record how many users are coming from each country and throw the rest of it away, right? You don't need data finer grained than how you're going to analyze it. So be suitably vague. You can also aggregate early. This is one that we really like with Clean Insights. Rather than every single time something measurable happens, sending data over the wire, aggregate it on device. You can do something like say, hey, how many times a week do users open this application? But you don't need to send, you know, and maybe you get the answer 33, but you don't need to send 33 different requests, one each time they open it, that would reveal a user's waking hours, right? Which was not something you were interested in the first place. Another technique is to add noise. And the math to this is complex sometimes, but a simple example is if I want to know the average age of my users, I could get that by asking everyone to please report their age plus or minus a random number between 1 and 100, right? And if you report to me 50, all I know is you're between negative 50 and 150 years old. Right, I learn very little about you, but if I had a million users do the same thing, I would get the average age pretty accurately. So noise can be a great strategy for protecting an individual's data. You also have kind of the idea of transparency. One good way to do that is explicit and qualitative engagement. When people answer questions and you survey them or you talk to them, they understand what they're revealing and what they're sharing and what the context is. It's a lot different than kind of watching everything in the background and taking, you know, digital notes like we often see with analytics packages. You can also do multi-party computing. Make it so that no single person can read the data. And this is complex, And explaining even the basics of it is beyond the scope of this talk. But suffice to say, if you split the data upright, no individual could look and peek at the data and figure out what the fact about user A was or what the fact about user B was. They have to collectively compute it together. And what they can see then is the fact aggregated across all of the users of interest. So you could say, how many visits to this page did we have across all users? But we can't say, did user A visit that page? Very powerful and complex, but provides some really excellent guarantees. You can also reveal data that's not unique. So there have been cases where browser makers want to understand what the most common homepages are. And so they want to understand, you know, how many users have NewYorkTimes.com versus The Guardian as their homepage. But they don't want to know if you have some individual idiosyncratic homepage. They don't want that data at all. There are cryptographic approaches that you can take that only reveal what that number or what that homepage is if at least N people, and you get to pick the N, also submit that. So basically make sure that you're only revealed if you're in good company as having done that action. There are also all the anonymity talk subjects we talked about earlier can be very powerful for non-toxicity too. The further you can disconnect the data you do have from the identities of the users, the less likely it is to come back at that user. For confidentiality, you always have the option to keep it to yourself. If you are self-hosting the data and it's on your own server, it's not sent to third parties who might have mixed or changing incentives, right? And remember, those incentives can also include legal pressure. So it doesn't have to do solely with their own intentions. You can also have a lawyer, right? Even where you're using third parties, maybe it's a cloud provider, you can arrange that your data is only used in various ways. And that provides guarantees that are useful in some contexts and not useful in others, but it can be a powerful lever. And last, you can use that multi-party computing that we just talked about to make sure no single person can read the data in the first place. And that means that you could hire three different cloud providers to be providing you compute services, knowing full well that no single one of them could read the data and repurpose it for their own ends. Only if all of you collaborate together would that be possible. On the topic of legality, I'm not a lawyer. There are a ton of great resources out there, and frankly, it's a moving target in so many jurisdictions that it's well beyond the scope of what I think we could cover here. But there are a number of techniques for making sure you stay between the lines on all the different privacy laws that are emerging worldwide. So we might look at this and we might say, okay, I see the techniques that are appropriate to me. Maybe it's that I should be vague, right? Suitably vague, because I only care about country level data. I should dispose of anything that's more identifying than that and keep only that. Or I only need to know how many times a page was visited. I don't need to know every visit by every user over a long period of time, so on and so forth. So then we can ask, what analytics package is right for me, given those? So this is four that are out there. There are, of course, many, many more. And each of these goes quite deep. And so we won't get all the details of all of them. But let me give you an idea of what options exist. So Plausible is a privacy-focused, very simple analytics application. The technique that it takes is to be forgetful. So it does track user activities within a day. If you visit page A and page B and page C, you can see that that was the same user instead of perhaps could be three different users each visiting one page. But at the end of the day, it forgets that unique identifier, right? And so what they say is that the actions are all de-identified. And de-identification is a difficult tightrope to walk. And so I kind of use finger quotes when I talk about de-identification, because there are situations in which that may not be true, both during the day, when you can see that this user here was also the person who did this and you can track that, and also back over time if you're able to find unique patterns in what they've done that are themselves revealing of who the user is. So it's useful, if not ironclad. Another option with Plausible is to keep it to yourself. So you can get a cloud-hosted version in the EU. They draw